How's it? How are you doing? Hope you've had a superb sporting week. The year's certainly galloping fast. It's that time of the week again for another installment of your weekly sports podcast, Talking Point. If you're joining us for the first time, it's the forum where we engage in debate with our top citizen sports journalists who keep you in the loop every day on our print and online portals. And from time to time, we also line up some very special guests. Welcome to it. My name's Trevor Cramer. No prizes for guessing. Rugby still. And will, for the next 6 weeks at least, dominate the conversation. So I'm joined in studio this week by Head of Citizen Sport, Jacques van der Westhuizen. He's pulling his rugby jersey over his head as we speak to share his astute knowledge with us. Welcome back, Jacques.
Hello, Trevor. Thank you.
And a bit later in the show, listen out for that one. We'll be joined in our Talking Point hotline, or on our Talking Point hotline, from Tokyo in Japan by the man we love to call the Hexecutioner. South Africa's mini marvel, multiple world boxing champion Heckie Budler, and his trainer Colin Nathan. More about that to come. Stay close. But let's kick off with rugby matters first. We're in week two of the Rugby World Cup in France. Not much going against the grain, really, other than perhaps the All Blacks losing their opening pool game for the first time ever. And that's a long haul. A Rugby World Cup started back in 1987. So let's delve into some of the issues and unpack them, Jacques. First order of business, the box side to play Romania on Sunday. It was always going to be a vastly different match 23 to that which played Scotland last week, but coach Jacques Nienaber has more than just shuffled the deck, if we can call it that. I'm not seeing too many other sides in this competition just yet with a high level of versatility that the Bok combination exhibits. Few players been tasked with playing slightly unfamiliar roles, or are they? Maybe not. I'm talking in particular about four scrum halves, two of which have been redeployed, if we can call it that. Take us through some of your biggest eyebrow raisers, Jacques, in that squad, and I believe there's a late injury change.
Yes, Trevor, the news that came through yesterday about Malcolm Marks being ruled out of the World Cup because of a knee injury picked up in training. He was never going to play against Romania, but that's a big blow for the Springboks and their chances going forward. I mean, we're only one game into the competition, so there's a long way to go. So Marks being ruled out is a big blow, obviously. Interesting that the management haven't called up anybody yet and say that they're going to keep the options open and they'll make a call much later on only. So I don't know who's going to come in. But obviously, hooker is a specialist position. At this stage, we've got Bongi and Mbonambi there. We've got Dion Ferreira, who's a backup. And then they're also talking about Marco van Staden. So very interesting. Only one of those three is really a specialist. So we'll have to wait and see what happens regarding the hooker situation. But looking ahead to Sunday's game, as you said, four scrum halves, that's obviously the big selection, surprise there. Grant Williams on the wing, we know he's got the pace. He's got some X factor about him, so a nice chance for him to show what he can do in a different position. And then Faf de Klerk on the bench, who's covering at fly half. I'm not too surprised. With Andre Pollard not around at this stage, we need somebody else who can potentially slot in at that number 10 position if anything were to happen to Marnie Lubbock or Damian Willems, who's playing a 10 this weekend. So some opportunity there for Faf de Klerk to play a 10 a bit, which is nice. And then, as you said, just a different team, an exciting team, one that we probably didn't quite expect in a number of the selections. But I'm glad to see Kanan Moody is back at 13. It'll be great to see how he goes again. And then in the forwards, nice to see Jean Klein and Marvin Ory getting a run.
Opposition-wise, Jacques, Romania very much a second-tier rugby nation. They came in as a late replacement for Spain, who had fielded an ineligible player during the qualifying rounds. Bulldozed by Ireland last week, but for the box, not only about momentum this week, but that points differential has to climb, especially towards the latter stages of the pool phase when you've got a team like Ireland in your pool.
Absolutely. That's the big thing for the box this weekend. Romania, they were given 82 points by Ireland, and the Springboks are going to probably have to try and match that just to keep, level pegging with Ireland on that points differential. All the teams in Pool B want to finish on top. Ireland started off well. They're probably looking at us and Scotland as their two big games. We've already had our one big game against Scotland, won that one. So it's really between the box and Ireland, possibly for that number one position. And as you say, if it comes down to it, you want to make sure that your points differential is right up there. So, yeah, a big one for the box. It's always a tricky match against a minnow team like Romania. Guys can become a bit loose, maybe, veer off the structure and the plan that was put in place. But ultimately, over 80 minutes, I think the box will prove way too strong for Romania. I don't see any hiccups at all. They'll be blown away eventually, but whether the box get to 80 is another matter.
Now, it's to be expected. It will always carry with it a fair deal of controversy and debate. But we need to try and steer clear of focusing on the 31st man on the field constantly, the referees. Yellow and red cards already brandished in the opening week of fixtures, predominantly for head contact. Now, let's isolate two particular incidents here, Jacques, if we can. England's Tom Curry, he was copped a two-match ban after being red-carded for what was deemed to be a head-on-head tackle in just the third minute on Argentina fullback Juan Cruz Malia. Then a similar, if not the same, incident early on in the box clash against Scotland. Jesse Creel colliding with Scotland number 8 Jack Dempsey. No further action required, as we heard it from the TMO and the reviewing officer, and I quote, "There was no clear and obvious foul play." Now, firstly, Jacques, does this spell danger going forward in the tournament? Too much focus on the referees and the TMOs. Did Curry actually deserve a red? And did Creel get a get-out-of-jail card as we look to consistent application of the laws?
Yeah, I mean, like you say, first weekend and already there's so much controversy around the refereeing and World Rugby's laws that stipulate that any head-on-head contact is going to be severely punished and looked at. And we had these incidents in the first couple of games. So, yeah, for me, the Tom Curry incident, I don't think it was even a yellow card. I mean, those sort of things for me are accidental. I don't think anybody goes into a rugby game or looks at a tackle situation and decides, well, I'm going to go with my head into my opposition's head. Those things are complete accidents. They happen. It's a contact sport. And if you look at that Curry incident, the Argentina player was going up and then coming down actually and fell into Curry rather than Curry actually going into him. So, you know, who's really to blame there? Curry couldn't get his head out of the way. Their heads clashed and he's unfortunately been banned for two matches with a red card. I find it to be quite ridiculous. And you know, when we look at these situations, all we really want is for common sense to prevail. And I don't see that happening. The Jesse Creel incident is almost similar. Creel went in for the tackle in a strange, awkward situation, awkward position, actually, more upright than he should have been. But it happens in rugby. You get caught, you know, napping or off guard with a change in direction or whatever, and you're in a position that you wouldn't ordinarily want to be in for a tackle, and your heads clash. In Creel's case, though, from a different angle, I've seen a few different angles of the actual incident. I don't even think his head clashed with Dempsey's at all. From a different angle. So that decision that was made there was spot on, and no reason to take it any further because there was no head contact when you see it from a different side angle. So, yeah, it's a tricky one. These are the laws, and this is what the players have been told that they need to be careful of. It's certainly not going to be the last time we speak about it during this World Cup. There's certainly going to be some other incidents where players are going to be yellow carded and red carded, but I think at the end of the day, all we really want is for common sense to prevail and for the lawmakers and the referees and that to realise that, players don't aim to go with their head into another player's head in a tackle situation.
I think the aerial ball is also going to have a big impact on the tournament and those 50-50 calls in the air and taking players out in the air, but we'll see what transpires eventually. All we actually ask for is consistency. As we look forward to the excitement that week two holds, anything in particular stood out for you, Jacques? Any surprise elements in week one? Fiji perhaps comes to mind for me, the ease with which 14-man England dispatched Argentina. Let's backtrack just a bit. What did you make of the box opener also against Scotland?
Yeah, I thought the box Scotland game went exactly the way I thought it would. I thought Scotland would be a tough team to get the better of. They're a very good team. I thought it would be tight in the first half, which it was. And then I also expected us to sort of get away from them in the second half, and we did that. I expected the box maybe to score one or two more tries than the two that they did. But it's a World Cup, and like I say, Scotland are not an easy team to get the better of. So not too surprising Surprised with that result there. But as you mentioned, I think Argentina, I expected a bit more from Argentina in their opening game. They would have targeted England for a potential win there to upset the apple cart. And then obviously the big one was Wales and Fiji, where it was a really 50-50 game. And Wales were probably better than a lot of people thought they could be or should be. And Fiji maybe just not up there, but they did make a good game of it towards the end. So all went according to script. No surprises there. I think we can expect more or less the same this week. Most of the big teams should win all their matches. I don't think we're in for any surprises again this weekend. I think the Springboks will win easily, and I think all the other big teams will also win their matches.
Maybe the English perhaps are starting to realise that Ford is not only a motor car. Great kicking display there, wasn't it? That's where we wrap our rugby segment this week. Jacques, thanks for joining us as always. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with us. Stay connected to our website, that's citizen.co.za, our daily print offering, also for coverage of the Rugby World Cup by our team of journalists, which includes Jacques, Ross Roche, Aten Corsi Tsortsi, and look out for our weekly analysis piece from former Lions Super Rugby coach Johan Ackerman. Lots to digest and read over this coming six-week period. Moving on, I'm now gloved up and ready. Fighting out of the blue corner at 150 kilograms, we're stepping into the boxing ring right now. It's a massive week for South African boxing. The man fondly dubbed the Hexecutioner by boxing fans, Hekkie Budler. He'll step between the ropes on Monday afternoon, South African time, at the Ariake Arena in Tokyo, Japan. He's challenging for the WBA and WBC Junior Flyweight World titles, as well as the Ring Magazine belt. And that's held by Japan's Kenshiro Teraji. I'm joined on the Talking Point hotline from Tokyo by Hekkie Budler and his longtime trainer, owner of the Hot Box Gym in Johannesburg, also the founder and director of No Doubt Management, Colin Nathan. Gents, thanks for your time. Welcome to Talking Point.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's just great. I mean, when you told us the magnitude and the venue, I kind of got goosebumps. I just think we're so ready for this. In fact, I don't think I know.
Great stuff. Now, Hekkie, you repeat it over and over. You're already a household name, no doubt about that, but you keep saying there are just two belts missing to complete that incredible collection of yours in a storied boxing career, the WBC and the WBO belt. That's still what you're after. You're on the cusp of history, a chance to capture the WBC version and become a multiple Ring Magazine champion on Monday, then a potential unification fight. You really want this one badly, don't you, Hekkie?
Yeah, I don't know when last I've wanted anything more. I think the last time I wanted something so much was a child. Because me and my wife struggled so long before pregnant. I think that was the last thing I want so much. So now I'm very looking forward to it. Very pumped, very happy, very fit, very ready. I can't wait.
Hekkie, you're no stranger to fighting abroad and being a bit of a road warrior yourself. Your upset win over Edwin Sotto comes to mind immediately in Sotto's own backyard. You also beat Ryoshi Taguchi, also on foreign soil. Fighting in Kenshiro's own backyard now in Japan, is that pretty intimidating for you?
And not anymore. In the start was a bit weird, but not anymore. I'm used to it now. I enjoy fighting guys in their own backyards. It's more fun for me. I enjoy it more. I don't know why. It's a weird thing to say, but I enjoy it. The odds always stocked against me. So when you're in the background, it's even worse. In the hometown, it's even worse. So yeah, no, but I enjoy it as well. I enjoy Japan. It's perfect. It's quite, people are nice. They love boxing, so it's cool.
Before I head across the corner to your trainer, Colin, you and your management team, you opted to take a pretty lucrative step aside clause on Teraji after defeating Sotto. Since then, less than a single round under your belt, Hekkie, in more than a year. Does that worry you a little bit?
I would have liked it the way it should. My coach convinced me. He said, if the guy's not your league, you should take him out. I did that. I've had brilliant sparring in the gym. I've trained since that fight. I took one day off. I was back in the gym training. So now everything happened the way it should, and I'm happy that fight ended as quick as it did. I didn't take any damage. My body's fresh. I feel good, and I'm happy.
Colin, we chatted about this earlier in the week. Homework before every fight is important. You would, in today's times, obviously had a good deal of access to fight footage of Teraji, his strengths, his weaknesses, areas your charge can exploit. Now, without divulging anything significant in terms of game plan, that would be pretty unfair. But you have studied Teraji very closely. One thing you did share with me in our conversation is the fact Taraji has fought far too many one-dimensional fighters, as you refer to it. And if anyone listens very carefully and sticks to a game plan, it's Heki. He's pretty much the full package.
I've seen Taraji win some really good fights and he's looked sensational doing it. But in the process, he's also taken a lot of punishments and a lot of shots. And he obviously loves guys walking onto him. He's got very fast feet, very good array of punches and combinations, good body punch as well, good timing on the right hand. But if you look at his opponents, he's never fought a guy of Heki's caliber and level and talent. And why I say that is that a lot of people are overlooking us because we lost to Kyoguchi and Shiro's Taraji, knocked him out. But boxing doesn't work like that. I've been around long enough to know in the sport that styles make fights. And I believe Heki's style is going to be a nightmare for Shiro. And I also believe that I've got the right horse who's going to win the race on Monday.
Confident stuff, as always. Before we wrap it, Colin, you've been Heki's trainer since he turned professional back in 2007. There's always been mumblings of Father Time coming up. Heki's now 35. Something I'd like you to share with us. It's always a trainer's role to boost his fighter and pump him up mentally and physically. But you've told me with a great deal of passion, Heki has never looked better. Share that with us.
If you look at the current world champions globally, most of the world champions are in their 30s. Heki, I believe, is really fresh for where he's at right now. Remember, he took 2.5 years off of boxing. That was due to his health and also because of COVID. I believe Taraji's had some really, even though, like I said, he's been winning his fights and he's been looking good doing it. He's also been taking a lot of headshots. And I think going into this fight Monday night, we're going to have the fresher guy. And I'm backing the right horse to win this race on Monday night in Heki Butler. There's no question in my mind we're going to win this fight.
Hey, Heki, a quick word for your fans back home and to our Talking Point listeners.
Thanks for supporting Watch the Fight on Monday. God bless all of you.
But before we wrap it, that part of the show where we hand out our awards for the weekly Flop and Gold Star of the Week. My Flop of the Week, that goes to the SAFA marketing department. As a collective, the shabby way in which they chose to market, or more like not market, two Bafana Bafana friendlies this past week against Namibia and the DRC. Played in virtually empty stadium at Orlando Stadium, in fact. In the second instance, well, thank heavens for the large expatriate Congolese community in South Africa who turned out to support their country. Must have felt close to a home game for the DRC, if ever. Take the blows, SAFA. Stop shifting the blame or clambering for excuses. Start getting your act together. And my gold star of the week goes to, won't be his first, let's hope he sustains his form, goes to Proteas cricketer Aidan Markram. He found willing accomplices in Themba Bavuma and Quinton de Kock. He's 102 not out, piloted the Proteas to a sizable 338 for six before Australia, all out for 227 in the third ODI in Potch. Kudos to Gerald Kutsia for some fine bowling. Jacques.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the rugby theme this week because it is the World Cup. Well done to the Springboks. I think they deserve a lot of credit for getting the World Cup campaign underway on a winning note and really playing well. And besides the Marks injury, I think everything is going pretty swimmingly for them at the moment. So well done to them for beating Scotland and getting underway quite well. And then my flop is, unfortunately, those lawmakers at World Rugby and the pedantic way that they officiate certain things in the game. It is ruining our sport. I know that there is a big clampdown on head injuries and concussion, and I understand the desire and the need to be cautious and to allow young kids to play the game without fear. But we also need to accept that rugby is a collision sport. It's a contact sport. There are going to be clashes. There are going to be head knocks. But I don't think anybody really goes in with any malicious intent to hurt somebody else. And these red cards and yellow cards are ruining our game. And I think common sense needs to prevail. And this issue certainly needs to be looked at further once this World Cup is over.
And Jacques stamps certainly on that one. That's where we'll wrap it. Have a great sporting week with the Citizen as your companion, both online and in print, of course. Jacques van der Westhuizen, head of Citizen Sport, thanks again for joining us. To Hickey Butler and trainer Colin Nathan, bring it home. My name is Trevor Kramer. This has been Talking Point. You'll find us on citizen.co.za. Why not follow Citizen News on Iono FM? You'll also find the podcast on the Citizen YouTube account. Remember, as always, don't wait for the opportunity. Simply create it. May all your days be sporting days. Till next time, cheers.